This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Vermont's governor, Phil Scott, has a pretty impressive claim to fame. He has the highest approval rating of any governor in the country. He's been in office 4 terms and is currently running for a 5th 2-year term. He's also in a rather unusual position. Governor Scott is just one of just 5 governors in the country with legislatures controlled by supermajorities of the other major political party. And he's the only Republican governor contending with a Democratic supermajority. These dynamics were the subject of a recent article in Politico. Governor Phil Scott joins us today to discuss the rather divided state of politics in Vermont and our country, as well as some of the major issues facing our region, from flood recovery to property taxes. Governor Phil Scott, welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're so glad you're here with us. And listeners, you can join our conversation as well. Many of you have already emailed us questions for the governor. You can also call in and ask him directly. What questions do you have for Governor Phil Scott? 800-639-2211 is our number, and our lines are open now. Governor, let's start with the state of politics here in Vermont. In the last legislative session, lawmakers overrode a record 6 of your vetoes. Did any of those veto overrides surprise you in any way, or did you know they were coming?
Well, I wouldn't say that I was surprised, but I thought it was unfortunate. Wanted to find an area where we could work together and come to agreement on areas that I think were important, and I think most Vermonters thought were important as well. But again, when you have a supermajority, you're somewhat out of balance, and they use that to their advantage, and they have every right to do that. They earned the supermajority. I believe that there should be more balance in Montpelier, and hopefully this next election will bring us a little bit more balance. But unfortunately, I mean, we're losing some of the moderate centrists, in particular in the Senate, people like Senator Mazza, who we lost, Senator Sears, who we lost, but also those retiring, Senator Kitchell, Senator Starr, and so forth. So we, I'm hoping that we can bring some of that balance back into the legislative process. So that we can all have our views heard and make our case and bring Vermonters the relief they need.
Give us a peek behind the curtain of what happens between legislative sessions during this summer period. Do you and members of your administrations have conversations with top legislative leaders, perhaps to kind of push forward this more collaborative type of relationship that you're talking about? Or is this sort of a breathing period, a working in separate spaces time?
You know, it's unfortunate. I'm not blaming it on the flooding. It's just the realization that we had floods. The flood of 23 came in July, and exactly 1 year later, another flood hit us, not to the extent of the first one, but that takes all of our bandwidth, both legislatively and you know, practically amongst the executive branch. So all hands on deck, taking care of the emergency at hand. So, you know, having those conversations, while they happened, weren't as frequent as they probably would have been had we not had the floods. But again, I'm not using that for an excuse. It's just a realization.
And I do want to talk about flood recovery and planning for future floods in just a moment. But for now, let's stick to this topic of the partisan divides that exist specifically in Vermont, because we got a question ahead of today's show from Rebecca, a listener in Huntington, who writes, I'm quoting here, from what I can gather, our low-paid and elected legislature works incredibly hard each session. And then at the end of each session, after all this work and passage of bills, the governor comes in and vetoes them. Rebecca says she's frustrated by this and asks, are you planning to promote viable alternative solutions to these issues that the legislature is trying to solve? And do you plan to work with the legislature in the next session or just stand in opposition to them? Now, we can tell what side of things Rebecca's coming from here, but I do think it's a question that we've heard in a number of our emails. I'm curious what your thoughts are to that opinion.
Well, Michaela, you probably understand how the legislative process works. When I present a budget, I present a budget and they work off from that. Unfortunately, they don't have to, and they didn't. They had their own agenda. It started right out of the gate. We had a budget adjustment that we presented, and they spent more than they should have in the budget adjustment. That set the tone and actually unfolded from there because we were spending money that we didn't have. So, you know, then we presented a budget, and again, they don't have to seek our opinion. It's a structure to work from, and they didn't. So, again, I think it's just a lack of understanding how the legislature works. And we certainly want to get our opinion. We want our policies to meet the finish line. And we actively pursue that. But that doesn't mean they have to listen to us. And that doesn't mean they have to do anything. They knew what we were. It wasn't a surprise. I would hope they wouldn't say that, but it wasn't any surprise that I vetoed most of those provisions because they didn't include what we'd asked for. So even close to what we asked for. So again, there's two sides to this, but having an understanding of the legislative process is helpful.
And Governor, what do you think of this rather unusual position that you are in, being a very popular governor, but one who is also at times heavily criticized for your vetoes? It's a probably peculiar space to operate in.
Well, again, I think that when you engage with Vermonters, whether they're Democrats or Republicans or centrists, independents, progressives, they all pay taxes, right? So I think some of them are concerned about things like property taxes. When their property taxes go up 14%, they're concerned about that. And I think that the extremes of the party, both parties, the Democrats and Republicans, are the loudest voices. So you probably, in your world, hear from some of them about what they don't like or do like, and I'm sure that it's probably equal between criticism of the legislature and criticism of me. But for the most part, I think those in the middle just want to survive. They want to have housing. They know, you know, we all campaigned on housing 2 years ago, and I wanted to follow through on that, and unfortunately, we didn't do enough, but it's still here. The crisis is still here, and it's getting worse. So, whether it's education funding, which has a ripple effect on our property taxes, or whether it's housing, the overall economy, I think, you know, everyday Vermonters, regardless of their political persuasion, care. So, again, I think if you talk to those in the middle, the moderates, the centrists, those who are willing to listen to one another, I think they're concerned about the direction of Vermont. And a lot of it's because of our demographics.
Our next question from a listener touches on just that, Governor. David asks, how do we confront the tribalism that is so prominent in America today? Can our state government and the legislature set the example by, for example, holding a special session discussing ways to confront hate and find ways to reach productive compromise? Is there a way to stop lies from being spread? What do you think of that suggestion, Governor?
You know, I think it is driven by national politics, this tribalism that we're seeing, experiencing, almost, and feeling, that it does have a ripple effect even to our small state of Vermont, which is really unfortunate. And it's not just one party, it's both parties. And as I said before, it's the loudest voices on the extremes of both parties that seem to catch the airwaves, catch the attention of the media. Because in some respects, and again, I'm not blaming the media, but they have to sell news. And when somebody makes some outlandish comment, they promote it. They make sure that people either read it or hear it or see it. And then that's not healthy, because I don't think that's the way most people think. But again, we're seeing this across the country, and this isn't caused by Donald Trump. He utilized it to his advantage in the election that he won, but it's been simmering for a decade or two. And I think the way we come to grips with that is to just act more appropriately, understand that we're supposed to be role models. We're supposed to be listening to one another. We can have vigorous debate on issues, and we should. That's important, but it doesn't have to get personal. Personal attacks aren't necessary, and I believe aren't constructive. So, again, this is a lot of it's driven by national, even worldwide politics, but we can set the tone here in Vermont by just treating each other with respect and civility, and listening to one another.
Governor, do you think that if you were running for the governorship of Vermont for the first time today, you would be elected, considering the partisanship that we're experiencing in our state and in the country?
Hard to say. I hadn't really even thought about that. But I just don't know. I mean, many years in the Senate. I was lieutenant governor before becoming governor. I think people had an opportunity to get to know me. I think that's important. So I've been steady, I think, in some of my approach and the way I view politics and the way I interact with people. And I think that they had gotten to know me in that way. So if you're saying, from the time that I was lieutenant governor on, I believe I would have still been elected, but hard to know in this world.
Yeah. We're speaking with Vermont's Governor Phil Scott. Governor, you brought up the current presidential election and former President Donald Trump. It's been a particularly intense month in this presidential race. Former President Trump was the target of an assassination attempt at a rally in Pennsylvania. President Joe Biden dropped out of the race and endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris to replace him on the ticket. A listener named Scott in East Montpelier wrote to us and says, "I applaud you, Governor Scott, for not supporting Trump in the past. Will you come out to support Vice President Harris?"
Yeah, again, I've talked about this a little bit at the last press conference. I think that it's an unknown. Kamala Harris, the vice president, is somewhat of an unknown. She has a lot of work to do to educate us. I think that, in the Biden administration, unlike some of the other administrations in the recent past, Vice President Harris hasn't been as visible. We don't know her as well. And I'm going to listen to the debates, listen to what she has to say, what her stance is on worldwide conflicts, inflation, the border, how do we make the United States, much like Vermont, more affordable? What is it we can do what is your platform? So again, I remain steady. I will not be voting for Donald Trump, but I'll wait and see what happens and who her running mate is. My hope would be that it would be a governor. I had said previous that that I wouldn't support another candidate for president if they hadn't served as governor at one time in their life. And I think that that gives you the executive experience you need, the understanding of the Congress or legislative process. And I just think it makes you well-rounded. And there are a number of candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, who have been governors, but I think they make the most sense, and they're the most successful in the end.
Have you been approached?
Oh, no, not me. No, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about other governors throughout the country.
Oh, I ask because we've received a number of emails suggesting it, including Denise here in Colchester, who writes, dovetailing on the opening conversation about moderation and centrist in government, it would be wonderful if Vice President Harris approached you, Governor Scott, as her running mate for 2024, and you ran on a split ticket. Would you consider it?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I haven't received any calls from anyone suggesting that. They have a number of candidates who are former governors or governors that they should consider. I think a Joe Manchin would be an interesting combination, coming from a rural state, served in the Senate, former governor, very practical, very much a moderate centrist. I mean, that would be interesting.
Of West Virginia.
Yes.
Yes, that would be interesting indeed. Well, let's go to the phones here. And listeners, if you have a question for Governor Phil Scott, give us a call at 800-639-2211. We have Tim in St. Albans calling in. Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to ask the governor a question regarding criminal justice issues. He opened up this last legislative session claiming that we need to do something in Vermont regarding our criminal justice, yet Vermont remains the fourth safest state in the nation. And while we've had issues going on recently, does the governor really believe that a candidate for president, or does he actually believe that people in Vermont are unsafe as a result of criminal justice issues, and what's his position on reform? Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Governor Scott?
Well, first of all, I do believe public safety is one area of common interest. We tried to work with the legislature on this. We worked with Senator Sears in particular, and actually got a number of our initiatives to the finish line. And I think that you know, we've heard from many across the state about the need for action sooner rather than later. And so we passed the S-58. That was one. It was had to do with increases the enforcement of drug trafficking and so forth, which I think is critical to slowing down the supply of these deadly drugs that are coming into our state. And we also focus on repeat offenses because we're seeing people commit crimes only to be back out on the street, recommitting just hours or days later. So we were able to get like 195 was that made changes to the conditions of release and bail, giving judges more tools to get people back into court and hold them accountable. And I know that this isn't all we need to do, but I think there were important steps forward, and we're going to have to continue to focus on this because, again, I think that's one of the core areas that Vermonters want us to work together on, and they want to see results. They want people to be held accountable for what they do, and they don't want them out on the streets just thumbing their nose at the courts. And not showing up for their for the court appearances. So again, there's a lot more work to do, but we made some gains, not significant enough, but we moved the needle a little bit.
Governor Scott, we need to take a short break, but before we do, since we're on this topic of public safety, frankly. And we were also discussing issues in national politics, such as former President Donald Trump being targeted by an assassination attempt. I am curious, do you feel concerned about your own safety? And to what extent are you worried about more political violence that's in part fueled by hateful rhetoric?
Yeah, it is really unfortunate. I think that, you know, this can't be. This is some area. This is an area we have to work on together. We should be settling our political disagreements in the voting booth, not with violence. That's what the election is all about. And I think, you know, we had an opportunity after former President Trump was shot. It was an opportunity to call for unity, which I thought he did. But it was only trying to unify the Republican Party. And what we need is more unification of all of us together, that we're Americans first, not Republicans or Democrats, we're Americans. But there's no place for violence. We need to disagree, to debate, and to campaign, to make these points. But we need to do it with civility and respect. And I think that we had an opportunity to do that. And it was a missed opportunity.
And we were just about to dive into the topic of flood resiliency and recovery. Now, Vermont requested federal assistance for flood damage following the flooding that occurred earlier this month. And as I understand it, Governor, FEMA officials are currently assessing whether specific counties have enough damage to qualify for individual assistance from the federal government. Have you heard a response? And if not, when do you expect one?
Well, we expect to get a response from them, hopefully sometime this week. We've heard some tidbits of information. It looks like out of the 8 counties that we had asked for assistance with, I think they've agreed with us on 7, working on the last one. I think it's Orange County, and we'll see where that goes. And that's for public assistance. And then there's the individual assistance. I think we're pretty good on and two counties. We'll see where we go from there. But we should hear something in the next few days, and then we'll have to seek that declaration from the president, which I expect it would be turned around fairly quick. Hmm.
Senator Peter Welch says FEMA is not getting the job done when it comes to providing disaster assistance to residents and to municipalities after last year's flooding. And he also says that it's time to fundamentally overhaul the way the federal government distributes disaster aid. How would you rate FEMA's performance in Vermont over the last 12 months?
You know, we learned a lot about FEMA during Irene, and so we've gleaned a lot from then forward, and we learned a lot last year as well. So I think you just have to have the mindset that FEMA is like an insurance company, and you're dealing with an entity that may not be there to make everything better, but they're going to do whatever they can within their structure to assist you. I think an overhaul makes a lot of sense. It's in the hands of Congress to do that. They are a creature. FEMA is a creature of the Congress, and they, when they receive their allotment of money, what they can spend, that's what they hold to. And so if there's any changes that need to be made with FEMA, it's Congress will have to do that. But we'd be obviously a willing partner to make any suggestions we might see. I think future mitigation, having money available, more money to prevent these types of situations in the future would be pragmatic and very helpful.
Now, the flooding that occurred a few weeks ago happened on the 1-year anniversary of last year's floods. Is this not going to just keep happening unless the state does something dramatic to mitigate against future floodings, like you're saying? I guess my question is, like, are the changes that we're making at the state level significant enough, in your opinion? Or do we need to do something much bigger?
Yeah, I would say that first of all, having this this flooding this year in 24, exactly 1 year after the extreme flooding we saw in 23, was a kick in the teeth for many, especially those who were still recovering from last year's flood. To say that this is a 100-year event or a 10-year event, we've proven that it may not be. So we need to take steps to make sure that we're mitigating as much as we can. We can't build in some areas. We're going to have buyouts in certain areas. We need to increase the capacity of storage, water storage. And we hear a lot of people asking for dredging, for instance, and unbeknownst to those who are asking, we agree that there needs to be dredging in certain places. There were 400 permits that were issued as a result of last year's flooding, and I expect there'll be more again this year. But dredging in the traditional sense, digging down deeper in these streams and rivers, isn't the answer. It's very difficult to do. I have experience in the excavation industry, 35 years of that, and I know how difficult that is to do. What we need is more capacity, though. We need to excavate maybe horizontally, giving areas, that's where the buyouts come in, and utilizing the land to store the water during these intense storms. So that's what I see happening. That will make the biggest difference in the future. But it's going to take money to buy out some of these properties. And there's got to be a willingness of those to sell as well. So again, I think that's the answer, at least in the short term. And it will take some time to do and a lot of money. But that's our focus at this point.
Mm. Money that you see largely coming from the federal government?
We have some state money, but there's federal money available from FEMA that we received, and we'll be receiving in this storm as well, I believe. But we need more of it. Hmm. It won't go far, but there'll be businesses, both businesses and residential homes, that will need to be bought out in order to provide for this storage capacity that we desperately need.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Vermont's Governor Phil Scott. We have a number of calls coming in for you, Governor, including Tiffany in Stowe. Tiffany, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you, Michaela. My question for the governor today is whether or not he believes the Agency of Education under his administration has captured and delivered the data that the legislature, school boards, and taxpayers need to be able to evaluate the equitability of our state's education funding system, as well as the quality of the education being delivered itself. Hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiffany. So a question specifically about data collection. There's a number of questions I have for you, Governor, about the education system and its funding. But let's start with Tiffany's. That's a great jumping off point.
Well, obviously, I understand where some would like to go, and I've been a willing partner in terms of trying to find a structural changes that will need to be made to make the education system more equitable and more affordable. We, we spend $2.4 billion a year for education. That's what we expect to spend in the next fiscal year. And that's, I think, the second highest in the nation, but we're not getting the results that we should. We have fewer students. We lose students almost on a daily basis if you do it per capita. And we have to make changes to reflect that change in demographics, fewer youth, and fewer means fewer students. Which we have a system that's built for a larger population, means that we're spending money on the infrastructure rather than for kids. But changing the way the education funding formula for some have said we should relieve the property tax program of this this burden, that we shouldn't be collecting it from property taxes. We should be doing it more in other areas. And that's fine. We can have that conversation. But until we have structural reforms, we're going to be just spending the same amount of money. It's coming out of a different pocket. And we're not really saving anything. But you might not see it in your property tax bills. So there's a lot of work left to do. And it's ongoing. It isn't a one time and then move on. It's going to be a continual issue that we haven't addressed as a state in the last probably 20 years.
Tiffany brought up the Agency of Education. Some listeners might be aware that last month, two Democratic state legislators sued you and the interim education secretary, Zoe Saunders. This comes after the Senate voted not to confirm Saunders as education secretary. And then right after that vote, you appointed her as in the interim role. Lawyers with the Vermont Attorney General's office have asked the court to dismiss this lawsuit. Why do you think it should be dismissed?
Well, I think it's within my constitutional authority to do so. I think it's pretty clear. And I think the Attorney General thinks it's pretty clear as well. So I think it's a bit of a frivolous suit and maybe to take everyone's eyes off from the real problem and the structural problems that we face, the enormous cost of education in Vermont and not addressing that accordingly. So I think we should move forward. We had some productive conversations behind the scenes with the legislature during this past session about what needs to be done. They actually came out with a number of different proposals for about 24 hours during that period before they pulled back those changes, but they're still viable, and hopefully we'll come to the conclusion that it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be satisfying to many, but it's going to be hard work, and difficult choices will have to be made, but they're going to have to be made until we can have an economy and a more affordable Vermont where we attract more people, more kids, and more working families to Vermont, mm-hmm. which we, again, desperately need.
Well, I hear you saying that the opposition to Zoe Saunders is in some ways a distraction towards other issues with the education system. I can imagine Democrats, though, in the legislature would say the same thing to you and urge you to appoint somebody else in the face of the staunch opposition to her. How does this get resolved?
Well, again, we're interim Secretary Saunders is going out on a campaign, a listening tour, and we'll see if there's areas where we can work together and find compromise. I believe there is. I think once you get to know Zoe, I think that you'll understand, as we did, that she's the right candidate for this position. For those who don't realize that I didn't just reach out and do a national search for a Secretary of Education. This comes by way of the State Board of Education. They had 17 candidates. They went out looking for candidates. They had 17 candidates that submitted their resumes and applications. And of those, they had to pare it down to three. So they did the work. They did all the interviewing, and they came down to three. Zoe, I believe, scored the highest of the three. We thought she was the right choice for Vermont to help us through these difficult times. And I think she'll prove to do just that. But I think her listening tour will gain insight into who she is, as well as solutions where we can move forward.
Let's take one more call from a listener. It was Sylvie in Tunbridge calling in. Sylvie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Governor. So I am calling as a person who is more than concerned about climate change. I think we just, obviously have not done enough in Vermont and worldwide. And I am really concerned about the amount of time and power that the utilities companies have in the conversation about our energy policy. And that was true in 2015 through 17, when the original renewable energy standard was passed, and we saw 1,300 to 1,500 jobs lost in the solar industry. Last year, we had...
And I'm sorry, Sylvie, we only have a little bit of time left with the governor, if you could jump to your question. I apologize.
The question is how do we mandate utilities to get on board for real emission reductions, not renewable energy, but real emission reductions? I'll take your answer off.
Thank you, Sylvie. Governor Scott?
Well, we have a public utility commission, again, an independent body of three people who take that into account. We have our public service department, part of the executive branch, that is the voice of ratepayers as well. And we have the legislative process. So again, the industries and it's changed over the years who the industry is, but they have a vested interest in what they're selling. And so we just have to determine what's best for Vermont. We have to make it as affordable as possible, reduce our emissions, and we have plans to do so. We've forwarded those plans to the legislature, and again, I think some of what they pass moved us in the wrong direction and make it less affordable here in Vermont. And I vetoed a number of those, but I wasn't successful. Again, one of the many reasons I think we need more balance in the legislature to make sure that we have balance in the end to protect Vermonters.
Well, thank you for your question, Sylvie. Governor Scott, I'm going to let you go with a softball, but also a very important question that we got from Katie in Hinesburg, who asks, what is your favorite creamy flavor?
Maple. That one's not hard. It just depends on where you get it, right?
That's why I said it was a softball. It was a sous vide maple. Do you have a favorite spot?
The Bragg Farm is good. I know my friend Al Gobay in Burlington. He makes a pretty good maple creamy himself. And then there's a local stand right down here on Route 2 in Montpelier. They do a good job. But I haven't had a bad maple creamy from anywhere.
Well, Katie, there's your answer. Thank you to you and to everybody else who wrote in and called in with questions for Governor Phil Scott. I had many more that we couldn't get to, so we'll have to have you on again soon. Governor Phil Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Michaela.
Governor Scott is also running for re-election this fall. And speaking of those elections, tomorrow and Wednesday during this time, we will be hosting the debates for the candidates for lieutenant governor. Republicans tomorrow, Democrats Wednesday. The lieutenant governor is second in line to the governor's seat, and they preside over the Vermont Senate and cast tie-breaking votes. They also have an important role in determining committee assignments for Vermont legislators. What questions do you have for the lieutenant governor candidates? Email them to us or record your question and send it as a voice memo to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. And join us for the debate between Republican candidates John Rogers and Gregory Thayer tomorrow at noon. If you're just tuning in, we just spoke with Vermont's governor, Phil Scott. And to help us debrief that conversation, we are joined now by Bob Kinzel. He is Vermont Public's senior political reporter. Bob, how are you doing today?
Michaela, doing great.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that conversation, particularly where it started off with a discussion about the partisanship that we're seeing, not just at the national level, but right here in Vermont.
That's right. You know, Phil Scott has talked about this problem for many, many years, and he's tried to tone down the discussions in Vermont, and he's been very critical of it nationally. So I think he hopes to just lower everybody's rhetoric a little bit. Let's debate these issues that are at stake and focus less on personalities.
And one thing that I thought was interesting, speaking of personalities, was that we discussed a Vice President Harris and the folks who have stepped up to support her in her run for president. Scott has not done so. But he says he wants to learn more about her. He also said that he's keeping an eye on who she selects as her vice presidential choice, and he's really pushing for it to be a governor.
You know, Michaela, he was very supportive of originally of a governor being the Republican candidate as well back in 2016, 2020, and this year. He really feels very strongly that governors understand how issues filter out with their constituents, how to get things done. They're the chief executives. They have to make decisions. So he has felt for quite a while that having a governor in the presidency would be a very, very good thing. And he may get his wish this time.
Mm. Oh, I did see if he might step into that role himself if he was asked. We've had a number of folks suggest that to us in our email inbox. He says he hasn't gotten any calls or emails from anyone yet about that.
Exactly. You know, I think a lot of people feel like he has had a very moderate course, that in many states he might be considered a moderate Democrat instead of a Republican. I don't think Vermont's three electoral votes, though, are going to really swing Vice President Harris's decision on who her running mate will be.
Oh, yeah. Well, you never know. We'll see. Bob, we did touch on the issue of property taxes and school funding. One of the major points of contention during the last legislative session. And from what I heard, both from callers and from Governor Scott, that issue is not fully resolved, despite the legislature overriding Governor Scott's veto, passing that yield bill.
I would think the legislative leaders, Michaela, would agree that what they did was really a one-year solution. It was stopgap. And a lot of people were not very happy with that solution because the increase was so large. So it's really going to be incumbent, I think, on the 2025 legislature to take a look at this. Now, they've got a commission that's going to study it and determine, you know, what cost savings can be made. And I think there's a feeling at the State House that there may need to be a stronger connection between local spending decisions and their tax rates. So if a community wants to keep a small elementary school open, or let's say you have a high school with 35 or 40 students, and you feel very strongly in that community that you want to keep that small high school open, well, there's going to have to be a way that you chip in a little more money to make that happen, and so that burden is not passed on to other communities across the state. You know, there's going to be talk about using the income tax, but as the governor mentioned, that's a funding question, not a structural cost expense question. And so I think the legislature is going to take a hard look at, do we have too many small schools in Vermont? And can the state afford to keep them all open? And how do taxpayers feel about that? And to get some community feedback around that.
Mm. Well, that'll be a big topic, I'm sure, for the next legislative session. Bob, help us set up the lieutenant governor debates that we're going to be hosting on Vermont Edition tomorrow and Wednesday. Since we just talked to the governor, now we're thinking lieutenant governor. Tell us more about what the lieutenant governor does and why this race is important.
You've got two great debates coming up this week, I've got to say.
Oh boy.
There are going to be a lot of people listening and wanting to see how these candidates present themselves. As you mentioned earlier, the lieutenant governor is the presiding officer of the Senate, serves on the Committee of Committees. That's the committee that determines committee assignments.
My favorite committee.
And has to be ready to step in as governor should there be a disaster that happens. And so I think in the Republican race, you've really got a fascinating contest, and it will give us an indication of how strong the pro-Trump movement is within the Vermont Republican Party. You've got two candidates, Greg Thayer, an accountant from Rutland, who's a staunch supporter of the former president. Greg Thayer was at the January 6th insurrection. He has disavowed all the violence that took place there, but he is an election denier. He ran for lieutenant governor back in 2022 against former state Senator Joe Benning, got roughly 45% of the vote. That was a lot because Joe Benning was pretty well known. So it'll be very interesting to see how Greg Thayer does in this race. And he's running against John Rogers, who's a lifelong Democrat, a former state senator from the Northeast Kingdom. His family has been in Vermont for many generations. So you might be saying, why is a lifelong Democrat running in the Republican primary? It would be a great question. Rogers says the Democratic Party has left him, that the Democratic supermajority at the statehouse has become much too progressive, favors big government, and most importantly, doesn't focus enough on the concerns of working Vermonters. So Rogers wants lawmakers to deal with some basic economic issues like the cost of living, the cost of health care, the cost of basic housing, rather than tackle issues like climate change. And Rogers thinks there's far too much government regulation that stifles business development. Rogers wants to be a spokesperson for the needs and priorities of rural Vermont, which he says has been totally overlooked in recent years. So it's a fascinating contest.
Well, I am very excited to be part of this debate tomorrow. Bob, you, your passion is infectious about it. And a reminder to listeners that you can listen to that tomorrow at noon live. You can also watch the debates at 7 p.m. tomorrow and Wednesday on Vermont Public's main TV channel. Also on Thursday, my colleague Mitch Wortley hosted a debate between the Democratic candidates for governor. You can find that on VermontPublic.org. Bob, briefly here, what should folks know about early voting?
Well, we're going to try to take a look at that, Michaela, to see how many people have taken advantage of early voting. Folks can go down to their town clerk's office. They can request these ballots by mail. We'll see if folks want to take advantage of this. You know, the real races, I think, that have a lot of interest are in the lieutenant governor's race. So it'll be interesting to see how many people kind of filter down to that race and say, yeah, I want to cast a ballot there. So we hope to know in the next week or so how much interest there is. I think, you know, as with these debates and people learning more about the candidates, interest will grow. We still have several weeks before the primary election, so there's lots of time for people to get their ballots early. And it's turned out to be a very preferable way of voting for many people. A lot of people like to get the ballots, research the candidates, and then send them in or drop them off at their local town clerks. So there are a lot of people, a lot of town clerks who feel that it's really helped boost voter turnout in Vermont.
Mm. And again, that statewide major party primary is on August 13th. Well, Bob, we look forward to your reporting on early voting. Learn what we can learn. Thank you so much for your time. Bob Kinzel, senior political reporter from Montpelier.
My pleasure, Michaela.
Well, that is all the time that we have for today's show. But just one more reminder. You are an important part of our coverage, particularly during this election season. Vermont Public is following the citizens' agenda approach for elections. That means we are centering you and your questions and your priorities in our political coverage. So if you have a question for one of the major party candidates for lieutenant governor, email it to us for consideration ahead of tomorrow's Republican debate and Wednesday's Democratic debate. You can send those to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Or if you'd rather, you could record your question and email that file to us, and we might use it during the debate. You can watch them at 7 p.m. tomorrow and Wednesday on Vermont Public's main TV channel. Today's show was directed by Jake Resnock. Our show is produced by Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Kelly DeLaurier was our call screener today, and our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch up again soon.